بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وارواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري وَحْلُلْ أُقْدَةً مِنْ لِسَانِ يَفْقَهُ قَوْلِ. Before I start the speech, which inshallah our topic will be the goodly life, we'll be talking about that and it's the role that this is going to play in our own spiritual development. But before that, I must say that it is an honor to be here. It's the first time for me coming to Leicester. It's nice to be here. And it is a special honor because I am addressing the soldiers of Imam Mahdi. We know that the arrival of the Imam is soon, and that the soldiers of the Mahdi have a special role to play. Other people who believe in the coming of, or the end of time, and that the return of Christ, I mean, I'm talking about people even who are not Muslims, they also have come to the realization that we're coming close to the end of time. But for us as Shias, first of all, it doesn't mean that we're expecting an apocalypse or that, you know, it'll be doomsday and we'll all die or anything like that. We're expecting that, no, the good times start when the Imam arrives. But before the Imam arrives, we have a special responsibility, and that is that we have to prepare the grounds for his arrival. We have to get this wonderful message of the Ahlul Bayt to the rest of the world. We have in the hadith, talking about the coming of the Imam, they say that knowledge will move from Kufa in Iraq to Qum. And from Qum, it'll spread to the east and the west until there is no one who is uninformed of this religion. It doesn't mean everybody's going to become Muslim, but everybody in the world should have heard this wonderful message. How are they going to hear that message? Well, obviously, all of them don't come to the masajid and listen to the sheikh speak. I mean, as soon as they see me and Imama, they might run back out the door. But you brothers and the sisters who are listening are out there in society, interacting with society. And it is your actions before your words which call people to the path of the Ahlul Bayt. So you're ambassadors of Islam. And then obviously after that, not only good actions, but then speaking about Islam, talking about Islam, explaining Islam to other people when they're curious. That's also part of our job. And when you look at this, why they explain why it is that our ulama, the maraja, are expecting the imminent victory of Islam. And they're saying that definitely in this century there will be a major victory for Islam. Nobody can say that it will definitely be the return of the Imam, because we don't have permission to say that. Nobody can say, you know, that in this particular year the Imam is going to return. That's not allowed for us. However, what they have said is that according to the signs they can see, there will be a major victory very soon. And all of us are hopeful that that victory will be the victory. But that, the other thing that's interesting is that when you hear the speech of the ulama who are based in Iran, and we would think of the Islamic movement and what's happening in Lebanon and what's happening in Iraq and what's happening overseas, what's interesting is that when you look at the words of the scholars, you'll see that one of the reasons they're explaining that the victory of Islam is on its way is that the Muslims in the West have woken up. They're looking over here. They're looking to see what you brothers and sisters are doing for the cause of Islam. Now, if we talk to the elders in our community, we will realize the difference between Islam right now and Islam, let's say, around 30 years ago. Speak to our elders, right? The people who passed Islam along to us, who built the centers, who started out in small houses, and ask them how many people were eating halal, how many people were practicing Islam, how many people were openly Muslim at that time, and then they can tell you very briefly what has happened in the last 30 years. The number of Muslims, the number of Shias, and more important than that, the spirit and the energy and the strength and the dignity that now the believers have. If before Muslims were apologizing for their faith, running to the West, looking for guidance for Islam, now Muslims are saying, no, West, you come here, let me tell you what Islam has to say. Not apologizing, backing down, giving up, making sajda, no. Or to save the rest of mankind. Right? When the imam returns, he's not going to kill everybody, right? The majority of mankind will make it, inshallah. So the task that's on your shoulders, my shoulders, is to save the rest of humanity. The rest of humanity. Now, obviously, preparing for such a huge task means you got to dig deep. We have to make sure that our actions are in line with the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt in our personal lives. That when the imam gets a report of my actions, we have in the hadith, that our actions are presented to the imam. And according to some of the traditions, sometimes the imam is ashamed and saddened with what he sees. We don't want that to happen. So we want to make sure that our actions are in line with the sharia. That when our actions are examined, when we say we want the imam to return, that means that, you know, I'm a soldier of the imam in his absence and in his presence. We have in some of the hadith, when they're speaking about the position, the manzila of the person who is al-muntadhir, who's awaiting the return of the imam, some of the hadith explained that for the people, the presence of the imam and the absence of the imam are absolutely the same. Now, our level of understanding of the path of the Ahlul Bayt has changed very much. If you look at the mission of Karbala, you see that believers, Shias, are going and advising the imam of what to do and what not to do. And Allah will reward them for their efforts and their sincerity. But now, the idea that you have in your mind of the imam of your time is the imam who knows the past, the present, and the future, who can see your actions. When you call on the imam hears you and he answers. And in some of the hadith, it's explained that he's even walked on your rugs. Other hadith explain that when you see the imam, when he returns, everybody will say that we've seen the imam somewhere. What happens is just like the time of Hazrat Yusuf in the Quran, where the brothers of Hazrat Yusuf, when they go to see him, they don't recognize him. He knows who they are, but they don't know who he is. If Allah doesn't want you to know, you won't know who you're talking to. So it's a very serious time, a very critical time. So we have to make sure our actions are correct. We have to make sure our beliefs are correct. That our beliefs, again, are things that we get from the path of the Ahlul Bayt, not our own understanding of Islam. What do the Ahlul Bayt have to say about the realities of the world, the realities of the universe? And then more than that is that we have to work on our spiritual side. We have to develop ourselves spiritually, self-development, jihad with the nafs, so that we can take this amanat and pass it on. And in the trials and exams that come up later, that we don't fail in those exams. This is a verse of Quran, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا عَلَيْكُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ O you who believe, take care of your souls. لَا يَضُرُّكُمْ مَنْ ذَلْ إِذَا اهْتَدَيْتُمْ The one who is misguided cannot hurt you if you're guided. So, for me, for preparation for the imam, actions, belief, but then more than that, the states of my heart. My heart has to be the heart which reflects that which my imam wants to see. So, we want to talk a little bit about Islamic spirituality tonight and one of the basic guiding principles in Islamic spirituality. Because we have correct Islamic spirituality and we have incorrect Islamic spirituality. One thing that you'll notice, if you go for tabligh, if you have the honor of being able to speak about the path of the Ahlul Bayt, you can tell that the Islamic awakening is happening around the world and the hearts of the believers are changing. Very noticeable. Not only, you know, you go as a muballigh, you prepare your ayat, hadith, you know, try and give the best speech you can, but then you notice that the people who are listening in the audience, last year they're at one level, this year their hearts are different, they're ready for something more about Islam. Not only the younger generation, but the older generation. So something's happening, but again, this is, as we get closer and closer to the coming of the Imam, hearts start to get more ready. It's mentioned in some of the hadith that the name of the Mahdi will be on everybody's tongue. And you're going to, as we get closer, we'll start to see that. So, because of that, we have to be careful about what Islamic spirituality is, because there are people who would take advantage of this natural state of the heart, the readiness that's there, and start to misguide people about Islam, willingly or unwillingly. Right now, if you go in the West, and not only the West, you go in the East, you go in the Middle East, you go to the villages, the Islamic awakening is taking place all over the world. And what happens is that it puts an extra responsibility on your shoulders and on my shoulders. Because right now, people will accept whatever you say as Islam. Whatever you say, you can speak the language of the people, you make it. So that means you can't say just anything and everything. You can't attribute anything to Islam. You have to make sure that your message is actually the correct message of the Ahlul Bayt. So, becoming more spiritual doesn't mean becoming a hermit, going off into the wilderness, taking your tasbih on the top of a mountain. Huh? Islamic spirituality is not like that. Islamic spirituality will be just like Amirul Mu'mineen, in the night crying in the Salatul Layl, and then in the day fighting in the battlefield. In society, among society, inviting people, carrying out all of the other duties that Allah has placed on your shoulders, and at the same time, your heart is with God in the heavens. You're always conscious of being in God's presence, working on yourself, developing yourself, even checking the states of your heart. One example from the life of Imam Khomeini, may Allah have mercy on his soul. He said that the night that he was taken by the Savak, the secret police at the time of the Shah, and those were ferocious guys. I mean, I've been to the torture chambers in Iran, and you see what the torture chambers were like, and then you understand what I'm going to say about Imam Khomeini. One of the tortures, there's a prison cell over there, and inshallah, you guys get a chance to go to Iran. One of the nice things to do is to visit this the prison that was over there. They call it Musee Ibrat. Over there, they had different tortures that they would do. What they said was that they, for instance, if it was in the time of the revolution, you would be taking papers, pamphlets, for instance, and you're going and you're distributing those and telling other people about the cause of Imam Khomeini and what's happening and stuff like that. So you would be part of a small team. Let's say you'd be five people. And you would make an agreement with all of your buddies that if I'm caught, I will wait 24 hours or 48 hours and I won't tell the Savak, the secret police, my name. Because if they find out my name, the police will come to the same area and then they'll arrest the whole team. So for 24 hours, or if it was your agreement, for 48 hours, you can't even tell them your name. And in the prison cell, the prison, their job is to beat it out of you. So one of the tortures that they had over there is that they had a small steel box. It's shorter than this thing over here, about a foot down. Right? A box. You put a human being inside this metal box. Then you put a bowl. You heat up the box from underneath. And so the person inside the metal box, they're pulling themselves up to the top of that box. And then they're stabbing the person on the top to make them fall back down onto the heated bottom. And you have to take these kind of tortures or the other tortures that were there and resist and fight back and say, no, not information, not even my name. Okay, so now, with that, bearing that in mind, the Savak go and they arrest Imam Khomeini and they're bringing him, the leader of the whole revolution, and they're bringing him now to Tehran. So he said that when the Savak arrested me and I was sitting inside the car, he said, I checked the state of my heart to see if I was afraid, I was nervous, and I saw that no. Nothing. Can you imagine that? Nothing. One time Imam Khomeini was speaking. Remember, Imam Khomeini, marja, leader, old. One time he was speaking in the Masjid Azam in Qom. And he said that, by Allah, I have never been afraid in my life. I wasn't afraid on the night that they took me. I have never been afraid in my life. So now, back to our own example. Just to give us an example, where we're trying to work with this spiritual development. So not only my actions, not only my beliefs, but even the state of my heart are in accordance to the spiritual teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. So I've got to dig deep. And now is the opportunity to prepare myself. So, salawat par Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So the point I was saying before, that the proper, the true spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt does not mean that we become a recluse, that we leave society, that we go away. Rather, it means that we are out there, we are speaking, and because you're in the West, you have a special role, similar to the role of Hazrat Zainab. For instance, when there's oppression going on in Palestine, for instance, in Gaza, for instance, then we who are here in the West, and we speak the language of the people, we've studied their secular studies, they know that we're regular human beings, we can use our tongues and explain the message to the masses. And we don't have to be afraid either. You know, they're going to get us and stuff like that, especially like sometimes people who are in America, they're a little bit afraid, especially before we had Mr. Bush there, you know, Hazrat Bush, Raziallahu An. We had him there, so people were a little bit scared, you know. There's a story that I heard that was very interesting. They said that there was a man who went on a, back in the day, he was traveling from Europe to go to America. And at those days, you would travel by ship. So he saved some cheese and some crackers, and he would go on the ship, and he'd be traveling across to America. So it turned out that other people on the ship, they would go to the restaurant. It was, traveling across the Atlantic. So they'd be eating, and they would be enjoying the food. And he could hear these guys eating, rubbing their bellies, talking about how good the food is. But he has his cheese and crackers, and he's being patient, and he's waiting until he makes it to the other side. One day, one of the other fellow passengers saw him over there having his cheese and cracker meal. So he said, "Brother, how come you don't come and join us over in the restaurant?" The man, he was very embarrassed. He was like, I'm sorry, but I don't have money to afford going to the restaurant. I saved everything I had just so I made it. So I took these cheese and crackers with me so that I could make it to the other side." The guy said, "The food in the restaurant, you paid for that with your ticket. You're starving yourself with cheese and crackers." So also, those of us who are over in the West, nobody's going to get you for talking about Palestine. You paid for it with the ticket. You pay taxes. You have the full right like anybody else. You belong here. Anybody who has, you're free to talk about Israel, I'm free to talk about Palestine. Huh? Do I have to apologize? No, I'm not going to apologize. Those days are over. Those days are over. So being spiritual and going on the path of the Ahlul Bayt means that I'm going to follow that example of the Ahlul Bayt, and I'm going to do what my taklif is, my duty, whatever that is. So, but that means we have to make sure that we get our teachings from a true source, from a correct source. Because there's other types of irfan that are going on also. Make sure we get it from a correct source. There's a verse in Quran, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانِ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ. So a man, a human being, must look at his food. So someone went to Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wassalam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. And he asked him, he said, "What do you mean? What does this verse mean? What's the deeper meaning of this verse that we look at our food, we pay attention to it?" You know, I mean, one could take a simple understanding. Okay, well, I make sure that my food is halal. I check that my food is healthy. All these things. He said, "But what's the other understanding, the deeper understanding?" And the imam answered, those are my words, but he asked the imam about the verse. The imam said, "Ilmuhu alladhi ya'khuduh." What Allah's referring to is your knowledge. The knowledge that he gets. Amman ya'khuduhu. Who does he get his knowledge from? We have to be making sure that we get correct knowledge from a true source. Now, there's something that I find very interesting. And that is that in every other field on the face of the earth, You have to be an expert in that field to talk about that field in every other field, right? Let's say right now, I mean, I haven't studied medicine, right? If I opened up a medical office and I put, you know, Dr. Usama Abdul Ghani out there, huh? Even if I was curing people, the police would come, they'd shut down the place, they'd arrest me, drag me out, and everybody being like this, you know, it's quack. But when it comes to Islam, it's the opposite. Anybody and everybody, Islam says this, Islam says that, my fatwa is, you're a mujtahid, are you an expert? Why is it only Islam? Islam is less important than everything. Anybody, whereas when it comes to any other field, have you studied? Yes? Okay, your teachers, you, right? So I'm not saying that, though, you know, somebody would say, you know, because they said that back in the day in Iran, there was a masjid or a center, and there was a curtain. The sisters were sitting on one side, and the brothers were sitting on one side. So then they would have the speech, they would do the masaib, and everybody would be doing the matam. And then during the matam, this guy used to faint during the matam because he would get carried away. But they said what was interesting is he would always faint on the sister's side of the curtain. So what happens sometimes, does that mean people want to faint on the wrong side? Don't anybody talk about Islam unless you've been in the house and you're creating a class of ulama. No, I'm not creating a class of ulama. I'm saying that anybody who wants to speak about Islam, if I don't know, make sure that I get my information from correct sources. I'm telling you, people will accept what you say as Islam. So if you want to speak about Islam, and I encourage you to speak about Islam, make sure your information is correct. You can be changing people's beliefs. Remember, one day, all of us, you and I, we will all answer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for everything that we said. So if people took what I said and then they started believing or practicing, then I will have to answer for that. So if I'm not an expert in Islam, that means I go and I get make sure I get correct information. More than that, we actually need people to go into the Hawza. We need people to go into the Hawza. When Ayatollah Tabrizi died, Marhum Ayatollah Tabrizi, Ayatollah al-Uzma Tabrizi, there was a man named Sheikh Ansarian who was speaking. And he's speaking in the masjid, and he saw that there were four of the Maraja sitting in the audience. So he said, I'm not a mujtahid. I'm not a marja. But what I'm about to say, if it's incorrect, there are four marjas sitting here. If it's incorrect, then they should correct me. He said, I'm going to tell you guys that right now we here in Iran, need 1 million scholars. He said, maximum right now we have 100,000. In Iran, where you have a population of 70 million, where you have the Basij, where you have the Rahbar, where you have, you know, the Revolutionary Guards. In Iran, how many ulama do you need? 1 million. The marjas were sitting all there. After the speech, one of the marjas took him aside. He said, I said more than that, and it's in this particular book. So what that means is that for us, as soldiers of the Mahdi, we have, and I'm not saying everybody's not going to make it to Iran. Everybody's not going to make it. But what we can do is that we change our way of thinking so that Islam becomes what's most important. Our taklif, our duty to God becomes what's most important. And then as parents, as children, as brothers and sisters, we encourage everybody to do whatever their taklif is. And for those people who are able to come to the Hawza, and able to serve in the house, then those people need to go to the house. And if they don't, then they will have to answer to God as to why they did, because it's their duty. The brother was just speaking about the Muballigh program that they're trying to have and trying to arrange in Syria. I'm telling you right now, brothers and sisters, when you look at the situation right here in England and in the rest of the world, the solution for our problem is to create strong, heavyweight, homegrown ulama. Now, if we were Wahhabis, it'd be easy. And I'm not trying to, you know, mock our Wahhabi brethren or anything like that, but it'd be a lot easier. I mean, if you had a, you know, a nice beard, a miswak, you know, you, Right? But if a Shia alim, it takes a little bit more than that. It takes a little bit more than that. If you want to be a Shia alim, when we're saying alims, we're not saying somebody just to come and lead salat, just to come and read the dua, just to come and bury the dead. Ulama in the Shia doctrine are the focal point of the community. We don't believe in a separation of church and state. We need Islamic thinkers. Even more than we create Islamic centers, we need to have a strong alim in that center to lead and guide the community in the direction of Islam. To tell us what our taklif is. To see, not only to tell us what's in the risala, but when he's faced with a new situation which Islam is faced with in the West, to say that the Islamic decision and this particular, under these particular conditions, is this, based on Quran and Sunnah. And be able to do that task. And that takes years of study. That's not easy. That's not easy. So we need people to commit and then to go. So for us as Muslims, we say that those people who are authorities in the practical law, because we're talking about, let's not lose the point, we're talking about the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt, getting advice from true spiritual teachers and bettering ourselves. And this is one of the blessings of being able to come to Qum, that we can benefit by teachers who have been trained in the Hawza and can actually take people on the spiritual path. But we'll get to that in a bit. For the moment, we're saying that we have to follow expertise. So when we refer to the practical laws in Islam, we look to Maraja. There was a conference they had in Israel after the victory of the Islamic Republic. And they said, what is it that makes the Shias tick? Tel Aviv. They wanted to find out. So they said there's three things about these Shias that make them unstoppable. And for us, when we hear these three things, we want to make sure that we protect these three things. They said one of the things about the Shia is that the Shia believe in the Mahdi. No matter how bleak the situation is on the outside, as a Shia, as a soldier of Imam Mahdi, I always feel good. We're about to be victorious. As the hadith explained, whatever happens, all of the events that happen in the world are in the favor of the believer, unless the believer obviously does something and brings down bala and affliction on himself. Right? So global warming, the economy is being destroyed, should I run out and commit suicide? No. As a Shia, I'm like, well, these things happen before the coming of the Imam. I just have to do my duty. So one of the things they said that is the Imam. The other thing that they said about the Shias is that the Shias have the belief in Imam Hussein. You can't threaten the Shias. You can't scare a Shia. You can jump up and down, you can scream and shout, but for me, my example is Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein gave everything he had in the way of Allah. You're going to scare me with death, Yazid? Can't threaten me with that. Maybe I'm afraid of myself that I will fall off the path. I won't practice what Islam's teaching. But by threatening me, you're not going to get me to back down. So one is Imam Hussein. One is Imam Zaman. The other thing they said was marja'iyah. The Shias have marjas. The Shias have individuals who are recognized as the representative of Imam Mahdi in his absence. That's what we say about the marches. And because we have that, we can be mobilized. One example from the lifetime of Imam Khomeini, just before the revolution became victorious, the Shah had decided to arrest all of the heads of the revolution. It was about 50 guys who were like the top guys. And he declared martial law, and the plan was to go over and arrest these guys. However, Imam Khomeini gave the order for the people to break the martial law. One of the scholars called up Imam Khomeini. He said, you can't tell everybody to go in the streets. What's going to happen? Everybody's going to get killed. Imam Khomeini said, suppose the order is not my order. The alim just dropped the phone. So because of that, the people went in the street. They were able to break the martial law, and the revolution was victorious. But for our brothers and sisters of the Ahlul Sunnah, they had a similar situation in Algeria, where they won the elections by 80%. Again, martial law was declared. Ayatollah Khamenei, the present Wali Faqih, called the leaders of the movement in Algeria and he said, brothers, now it's time to break the martial law. But our brothers and sisters, our Sunni brothers and sisters, don't have the concept of the Wali Faqih. Everybody can be, you know, Wali Faqih Sheikh. They don't have the concept of Marja'iyat, and then the massacres and bloodshed. So for us, those three things are things we want to keep near and dear to us. And if we hear anybody start to insult the marja, belittle what the marjas are saying, the marjas are like this, they, then, you know, the antenna should go way up. Israel says, I'm not saying everybody who does this, they're working with Israel, but if you're saying something the enemies of Islam are saying, then I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be a little bit nervous about that. Okay, so now, when it comes to the spiritual teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, we also have experts in this field. People who can not only, like, let's say you come to a lecture like this, then you listen to the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt and you try and see how it benefits you in your personal life. But there are some teachers who can take us along the spiritual path, give us guidance for me as an individual. Help me change myself. Help me change my life. There are five things that I've written down just as what the teacher is supposed to do, the spiritual teacher, and then after that I'll explain what this principle is. Very briefly, the spiritual teacher is supposed to make sure he explains to you the dangers of this spiritual path. Imagine somebody who is going up a mountain. If you fall from the bottom of a mountain, you won't hurt yourself that much. But imagine if you're up on the top of the mountain, what will happen to you if you fall? So if you're going along in the spiritual path, you need somebody to warn you of those dangers that are out there. Second, he's supposed to give you instructions, dhikr, that you're supposed to recite. Some of those dhikr, it's explained by the teachers, the spiritual teachers, they say that some of them can work like a grenade. If you don't get imagine if you go into a drugstore, you know, and you just start grabbing medicine off the shelf, you know, think you're Jason Bourne, you know, you just walk in, right? You kill yourself. Right? Sometimes when it comes to the dhikr of the Ahlul Bayt, it can be the same thing. You have to make sure that that dhikr is suitable for you at a certain stage. Third, to give you those instructions, to keep you from going to extremes, to give you encouragement when you feel down, you feel like, maybe I can't make it. And to cure your spiritual diseases. So, for us, we want to make very sure of who these individuals are. Who are these spiritual teachers? I don't want to just see anybody who sounds good, who has a big imama. That person is my spiritual teacher. That person is my guide. Right? Because the Ahlul Bayt have, first of all, you see what they're qualified, what they have to be able to do. And after that, you have to know who this individual is. If you ignore the teaching, and the Ahlul Bayt have been very serious about, you heard the hadith, to go over and who do I get my knowledge from? If I choose to ignore the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt and just follow anybody, then after that, you're on your own. Don't blame Allah for what happens next. Go to the wrong spiritual teachers. Don't do your research. I don't ask who this person's teacher is. Who are you? Who's your teacher? Is he accredited? Do we know who you? I don't do that. Then I'm all on my own. God bless you. Now, we want to do one of the basic, I'm not a spiritual teacher, so all yours, but no, I'm not a spiritual teacher. I want to tell you some of the basic instructions that are given to everybody if you want to go on the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt, which is what we are talking about tonight, leading the goodly life. There's a misconception that happens. For people like me, I was born Sunni, and I became Shia, and then gradually, alhamdulillah, I was able to come to the Hausa. I remember as a little kid, I used to think of Islam in this way, that as a Muslim, I suffer here in this world. Allah says, don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. I suffer, and then in the end, I'll be rewarded and it'll be revenge. The bad people go to hell, and I'll go to paradise. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. But the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt is a little bit different than that. What they teach us is that actually, as a Muslim, you're supposed to enjoy life in this world, and then the hereafter, if you want to succeed on the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt. We have ayat of Quran about this. We have ahadith. So let me just read to you one ayat of Quran, which is the basis for our whole discussion tonight. It says, "Man amila salihan min dhakarin wa untha." Whoever does good deeds, be male or female, wa huwa mu'minun, and he's a believer. فَلَنُحْيَنَّهُ حَيَاةً طَيِّبًا. Certainly we will make him live a goodly life. Is that goodly life in the hereafter? That goodly life is for you here, brothers and sisters. If you lead that goodly life here, you will radiate happiness from within. It'll be easy for you to invite other people to Islam. And it's necessary for your spiritual growth. Necessary for your spiritual growth. It's one of the cornerstones. I'm going to make it very brief, but it doesn't mean we should belittle the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt. Right? We have another ayat of Quran. خَلَقَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا. Allah made everything in the world for you. So now this hadith, which again we have this several hadiths from various ma'asumeen and also even from previous prophets. The one that I'm about to relate to you though is from Imam Qadhim alayhi salatu wasalam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Because the time is coming to an end, I won't read you the Arabic, but the Imam explains it in this way. He says, try to make your day into four parts. And when you read the words of the hadith, you realize that it's not four equal parts, but four parts. He says, one part of your day, limunajatillah. One part of your day is for whispering to God. Your time with God. You're speaking to God. Let's say your wajibat, the duties that you have as a Muslim. Your wajibat, your khums, your... Right? One part of your day is for those things which Allah has made obligatory on you. He says, one part of your day, sa'atun li'amril ma'ash. One part of your day is for your occupation, whatever your job is. You know, they say, you know, if you don't have anything to do, then shaitan likes that. And Allah hates that. If there's an idle youth, I don't have anything to do. I just sit home all day, me and my PlayStation. Yes, you and your PlayStation, shaitan is right there with you. Come on, buddy, let's get busy. Everybody has to have something to do. Everybody has to have an occupation. It might not necessarily mean that you go to an office and work. Let's say you're a mother, you're home, and you're taking care of your children. That's an occupation, a noble and sharif occupation. The West may have killed that and butchered that and made people feel worthless for serving in the house and raising children, but that's their problem. That's not Islam's problem. So, but we all need an occupation. We need something that we're doing. So one part of my day for my time with God. One part of my day for my occupation. Another thing that they say in our, when you have an occupation, whatever the mu'min does, he does well. Hadith. The mu'min, if he's going to do something, he does it well. Like they said, the Prophet of Allah was burying his son Ibrahim, and he was fixing the grave. And either somebody complained, or the Prophet explained this hadith after his complaining, or no, that the Prophet just explained. He said what the, somebody saw the Prophet's fixing, the way I remembered it, was that somebody saw the Prophet fixing the grave. So maybe at that stage, they could, you know, Prophet, it's a grave, just put a little dirt on it, ya Allah, let's go. The Prophet said, no, whatever the believer does, he does well. So either after that, it taraz, or without that. Whatever he does well. And we want to invite people to Islam through our practice, through our integrity. Not that Muslims are cheating the government, stealing, lying. The most devious people on earth are the Muslims. They have these incredibly bright minds when it comes to bad actions. Sometimes you see, I remember they said that in Turkey, they had these Muslims who were car thieves, Muslim car thieves. So what the Muslim car thieves would be that they would walk past your car, and if they saw a tasbih hanging in your car, they would know you were Muslim. Don't steal his car, he's one of the brothers. Next car. So what happened was the non-Muslims discovered that they should hang a tasbih in their cars. So that's not how we want to spread Islam. Everybody has tasbih, they're so scared of the Muslim. No, whatever I do, I do well. Whatever I do well with integrity. So one part of my day was for that. One part of my day is my halal downtime. Sa'atun lima'asharatil ikhwan. One time is for the time that I spend with my brothers, or for our sisters with their sisters. There's no hanky, you know, brothers with it, no hanky-panky here. Everybody, right? But time with my brothers, and the hadith continues. And those who I trust, thiqat, al-thiqat. Those who I trust, who want what's best for me, but will also tell me my flaws. A true friend is not going to only butter you up. If they see you making a mistake, bro, that's incorrect. Islam doesn't like that. We got a lot to answer. They'll be friendly, they'll talk to you or whatever, but a true friend will be like that. And then the last part they say is for your halal pleasure. Hadith. And it says, interesting, it says with that part of the day you'll have the energy for the other three parts. So part of my day was for my time with God. Part of my day was my time, my occupation. Part of the time with my brothers and those who I trust, true friends. Part of the time was for my halal pleasure. And this is one of the principles of the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt. We don't want to take it so lightly. Question now, though. I've been taught that as Muslims, we're supposed to do jihad with the nafs. And you're telling me right now that the whole world was created for me, that Allah wants me to enjoy myself. What about all of those other hadith that tell me to go against the nafs and to fight with the nafs and to wage war with the nafs? What about all of those hadith? Good question. I'll put you in another way, because this is the way it was posed to one of these urafa. They said that there's sometimes when I'm enjoying myself, and I'm wondering, is this something which I'm enjoying, which is good and correct, and the Ahlul Bayt have encouraged me to be doing? Or is it one of those pleasures that I should be fighting with the nafs for and going? The teacher gave him three criteria, three things to look for to make sure that what he's doing is the right thing. He said the first is that you make sure what you're doing is halal, according to your marj. The second is that you make sure that you're not going to extremes in that pleasure, whatever that is. You know, I don't go to extremes in that. And then the third thing he says is that you use it as a means of you getting nearer to God. Use it as a means of you. For instance, let's say you like to work out. Let's say that's your halal pleasure, you like to work out. Right? And knowing that the coming of the imam is soon, then you want to be able to run and carry a Kalashnikov, right? I mean, God knows, if we're fighting with swords, then, right? But for right now, we know that, you know, we're training to fight with modern weapons. So when the imam returns, you want to be able to fight. So exercise should be part of everybody's routine. When you look at the advice of the ulama, even the spiritual advice, everybody should be exercising. So, now I'm going to make sure I don't go to extremes in this. I spend hours and hours in the gym. I don't want to. Right? I want to make sure, though, that I use this as a means of me getting nearer to God. When I go in, I'm like, Imam Mahdi's watching. So I go and I lift my weights. That's my halal. So if we're doing that, then it's something we don't want to feel guilty about. You see, shaitan, he comes to you from every angle. One of shaitan's jobs is to make you feel guilty about the things you shouldn't feel guilty about. And then the things you should feel guilty about, shaitan's like, take it easy, buddy. I'm here. It's okay. We're both in this together. So the things I shouldn't be feeling guilty about, I feel guilty about. So sometimes, even when it comes to this issue of the halal pleasure, sometimes religious people who are working on them, which is why the spiritual teachers emphasize on this, the spiritual people who are working on themselves, who are trying to do this jihad with the nafs, and believe me, we have work to do with the nafs. You have to rid yourself of so many evil traits. Arrogance, cowardice, not being confident. We have a lot of stinginess. We've got a lot of work to do. Nobody's saying that we don't fight against the nafs. But the thing is that when I enjoy myself at all times, is it following the nafs? No, it's not. Not if I'm doing the thing that the Ahlul Bayt have instructed me. You have other hadith that say that Allah loves that you take advantage of what He's allowed the same way that He loves that you carry out the wajibat. So I don't want to feel guilty about that. Actually, I'm doing the right thing when it comes to that. So, for me now, I'll try and take this teaching of the Ahlul Bayt and implement it in my daily life. Remember that this is the springboard for me to soar spiritually. So now in the end, I'd like to make a dua for all of us. Inshallah, we hope that Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, He will answer it for us. Bi Fatima wa Abiha wa Ba'liha wa Baniha wa Sirr al-Mustawda'i fiha fa ajibna ya Allah. O Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, make all of us the true soldiers of Imam Mahdi. O Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, make Islam the focal point in our lives. By the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, may Allah forgive all of our sins. May forgive our marhumin. May Allah protect all of the believers, all of the mu'mineen, all of the maraja, and especially the leader. Salawat.